Welcome back to another episode of Clear the Air, the Simply Stogie Cigar Podcast After Show. I am your host, Tim. And what I like to do here is bring the hosts of the Simply Stogies podcast, your favorite cigar podcast, back to the microphones where we can dig a little deeper into the last episode that they published. And of course, this episode is going to be all about Brooks Whittington and a few other things that were discussed. Let me introduce our host. I'm going to start with Nick this episode. Nick, how are you? Hopefully you're feeling better. And what you smoking, if anything?
Smoking, still not. Feeling better much, except I have that lingering cough that'll probably go on for months and months. And the most annoying thing about the cough is that it sounds like a sneeze, I guess. I don't think it sounds like a sneeze to me, but everybody hears me. He's always, God bless you. I'm like, and it goes on and on. And unfortunately, that's what happens when I get sick. But other than that, I'm feeling pretty good. Just the cough.
That's good. Yeah, I think that's kind of the same issue I had going through the month of January. So that that does suck. So, and we got the trade show coming up. So hopefully that cough does clear up before we get there. Uh-huh. And then there's James. James, the legend behind the microphone. How are you doing?
Who the fuck says that I am the legend behind the microphone? Is that a
I read that wrong. That's not right at all.
it wouldn't be right at all. I am smoking a, because we're talking about what? We're talking about Festival del Habano. We're talking about the coverage that Nick did and that Brooks Whittington did for halfwheel.com. So I am smoking a Cuban cigar, unlike some folks on this podcast. I'm smoking a Punch Regional from 2017. And I gotta say, it's smoking pretty good right now.
Yeah, I don't have, I looked and I was trying to see if I had something from the Cuban area in my humidor, and I couldn't find anything. So if I do have something, it's buried very deep, but I highly doubt that I do. Before we get into this, you're watching this and you haven't watched the episode with Brooks Whittington, I suggest go ahead and turn this off, go back, take a listen or watch that, and then come back. It's too late this time, but going forward, if you watch the Simply Stogies podcast or listen, you have a question, you can email me cta@simplystogies.com, and I'll see if I can get your question on this episode to Nick and James. Before we get into it, there's a HERF coming up that is a sponsor for everything we're going to be doing at the trade show. James, if you want to put that out for our viewers, our listeners.
Worst segue of all time, but I'll take it. That's right, guys. HERF season upon us. Event season is here, kicked off, I guess, by TPE this year. Look, I've been talking about it for a Mile Kentucky HERF. It is the premier Midwest cigar HERF. Yes, Kentucky is considered Midwest in some cases. Not all, but some. So it works. Look, it doesn't matter where it's at. It's in Ashland, Kentucky. And Dwight and Steven put on a great show there, a great HERF. Look, $200 right now through the end of the month. Time's running out for you to get your tickets at $200. So you need to call Fat Ash at 606-254-0484. Get your VIP ticket. What that's going to get you. Here's what the VIP ticket gets you, Tim. Because I know you're dying to know. You're going to miss it. You have no idea. So I'm going to tell you. All right. Your ticket includes, obviously exclusive meet and greets with, principals, blenders, reps there in the cigar industry. Like, you're going to be able to get some FaceTime with them. Which you don't get that at every HERF or cigar event, which is great. You're going to get a Luciano Cigars branded bag, Mild Kentucky HERF t-shirt and swag. And let me tell you, the swag is always on point every year. Dwight does a great job with the swag. You're going to get a free cigar from every manufacturer that's there. That's going to be over a box of free cigars that you're going to get for your $200. I mean, there's not a lot of cigars out there that you can get a box of for less than $200 these days. This is great. You're also going to get exclusive deals and releases there with all the manufacturers. You're going to get two beer tickets, a food ticket voucher, and then obviously there's raffles and giveaways. Now, look, here's who's going to be there. All right, for sure, Luciano Morales, Luciano Cigars. Ricky Rodriguez, Chef Rick, as he likes to be called now. I don't know if you knew that name. He likes
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he is Chef Rick.
Chef Rick.
Chef Rick from West Tampa Tobacco will be there. Justo Arroyo from JRE and Aladino. Brian Motola from Cavalier Cigars, great guy. Lou Cross, friend of the show, personal friend of mine. I herf with him almost every night. Lou Cross from Lure Cigars will be there. And am I mistaken, Nick? You're going to be there? Is that true? LH Cigars is that a thing? Is that what I heard?
Yes.
It took a little bit. Like, I don't know if I should answer this.
No. I'm looking forward to going back. It's been a couple years. I really do like Dwight and Steven, and I do really agree with you. They do put on a great show, and it is a good time for all. So it's money well spent. Come on down. Hang out.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. You get to meet Nick in person. You'll get to meet me in person. We've got lots of surprises for you. They've got lots of surprises for you. Lots of raffles, a giveaway. Here's who's rumored to attend. We've still got some folks that may come, may not. We don't know, but here's who's rumored. Greg Free, Fortaleza Libre, Noel Rojas, Rojas Cigars, Hector Alfonso from Espinosa, Oscar Valadares, obviously Oscar Valadares Cigars, and Tom Lazuca from Asylum 13. Guys, give Dwight, Steven, or Tim a call at Fat Ash Cigars, 606-254-0484. That's 606-254-0484. And if Tim's feeling, froggy, he'll put it back down there, right underneath me, right there. Give him a call.
I'll put it
Hope
down.
To see you there. It is, like I said, it's my favorite event to go to every year. I look forward to it. And for $200, you can't beat it. Can't beat it.
There's so many uses of the name Tim lately, and I never know. Are we talking about me? Are we talking about a different Tim? Who the hell is a different Tim?
You're not going to be there. And you're not going to answer the phone for them. Thank God.
I sure won't.
Nobody would buy from you.
But yeah, anyway. So Brooks, how was that interview?
You watched it. You tell me.
I did.
How was the interview?
I liked it. I really liked it. See, here's the thing. I can relate with Brooks. I really can. He seems to have a good sense of humor.
I can relate.
Great sense of humor. I mean, it was there. He was trying to have some good laughs, but I feel like what we really have in common, and Nick, you can relate too, is we both have a boss that's just always on our ass trying to get shit done.
Listen, I went into business for myself, so I don't have to have a boss.
Right. It's just you, Tim.
It's just you.
It's just me. All right, my bad. I'm the one that can relate. I've always got somebody breathing down my neck trying to, we need to get this done. We need to get that done.
I need the fucking music, Tim. I need the music.
I need it tonight.
You know what? Some people need a boss and work better under a boss. Tim, it's true.
Tim, absolutely. 100%. Tim's one of those guys that needs a boss. Now, here's the thing. All joking aside, I really do need the music tonight, Tim. That sound. All joking aside, I think that Brooks does a great job for Half Wheel and with Charlie. He was the co-founder with Charlie. They both had two separate cigar blogs back in the day. They came together and they created halfwheel.com. And halfwheel.com, as we said in the show, it is the online cigar newspaper, journal, magazine, blog of record for cigars.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. That's a good thing, because I think the industry needs Half Wheel. If Half Wheel wasn't around,
there'd need to be something else similar.
Yeah,
And I think Charlie and Brooks and Patrick and everyone that they bring in throughout the year to kind of help with certain things, they all do a great job. I know Brooks says he doesn't write nearly as well as Charlie. I think he does. Like, look, I put in the show notes, a link to his, articles, day zero through five of Festival del Habano. I thought he covered it really well.
I actually followed those links and I went out there and read his articles. I thought they were really well written, and gave me a good picture of what the event was like. You know, I almost didn't even need to watch the episode.
Right. Now, look, I want to apologize to Brooks publicly again. I didn't mean, because there were a couple of questions that were kind of out of left field, and I didn't really tell him I was going to ask him. But when I do these interviews, and Nick can attest to this, there's no show notes, there's no questions written down. It's a very organic conversation, much like this show is. There's just, you have questions for us. But on our end, on my, it's very organic. And so that's the way I do my interviews. And I feel like it puts people at ease, and it's not this rigid thing where you're following certain notes and certain topics. And it requires active listening on my part and on Nick's part, and to really kind of understand what the guest is saying. And that was a question, some of those questions about Cuba in general and whatnot. That was just off the top of my head that came up in reacting to some of the things he was saying and some of the things that he had written about in his articles. And I certainly wasn't trying to put him on the spot or sideswipe him or sandbag him with any of these questions. And I thought, and I think Nick can speak to this as well. I thought he answered them very well, very thoughtful, and added some insight to it. A couple of those questions were difficult questions.
Look, I wouldn't say they were difficult. What our listeners may or may not know is that Brooks doesn't do a lot of these. He's not comfortable behind a microphone, believe it or not, behind a camera. That's what he's told me privately, publicly. He makes no bones about it. He's stepping outside his comfort zone. He realizes he should do this more. I think Charlie encourages him. I think if it wasn't for Charlie encouraging him to do this, he probably wouldn't have done it. But, you know, I think he does a great job. He's just got to get, you know, step outside that comfort zone. And I think he was a little bit uncomfortable in the spotlight, so to speak. He's not uncomfortable writing his articles and doing what he does. But so I think it's good. No, he was fine. He was fine. He was just a little, I don't want to say nervous, but, you know, he, like I said, he just doesn't do these that often.
Well, yeah, kind of wondered if maybe, you know, he's got to be careful of some of the answers that he gives. You know, he doesn't want to say something that's his opinion.
Well, you're not wrong, because, and I feel like that was, but he came across very thoughtful, not just in maybe tempering his opinion with what is, you know, because from a journalistic standpoint, you try to take your opinion out, all your bias, right? Sure. I thought he did a really good job with that, but also juggling, and Nick knows this probably better than you or I do, juggling what you can say that's not going to piss off the Cuban government, and then also what's not going to piss off your boss, so to speak, in Charlie. I don't think Charlie's his boss. Like I said, I think it's kind of a symbiotic.
Well, Brooks always calls him his boss, whether he really is or isn't.
Right.
He feels that he needs to perform at the same level of Charlie. And I know that Brooks really holds him at a very high esteem, and the guy does do a great job. And Brooks is always telling me, you know, I know Brooks a lot better than I know Charlie. I've known Charlie for a number of years, but, you know, we're not exactly talking on the phone or hanging out in Cuba together. So, you know, Brooks has let me know that, you know, this guy, he expects a lot of himself, and whether or not he puts that pressure, whether it's real or just realized on Brooks' side, he feels the need to step up, and he's always working his ass off. And I think during our interview, if nothing else, I think he reflected on his own articles, because all you really did, James, is basically touch upon a couple of the stuff that he wrote about in his articles. And then he sat and said, well, maybe I shouldn't have gone into that. Maybe he shouldn't have gotten off into the left field. Yeah. Not that he did it on our show, but, you know, meaning with the articles. I think he was reflecting and wondering, maybe that wasn't such a great idea, because there was nothing wrong with what he wrote, and it came from the heart. And it's difficult to not have Cuba affect you at some level if you go more than once. It's just something about it. I've always told all my Cuban friends, you know, I'm 100% Greek, a Greek origin, but I always felt if there was any other part of some nationality, ethnicity in me, it would be Cuban, because not only all the time that I've spent there, I understand the people, I feel for the people, I know so many Cubans, so many Cuban friends. This industry initially started by Cubans. It seemed like in the first, you know, so many years, if you weren't Cuban, you didn't know anything about cigars. So they really have the pedigree in that regard. But, you know, it's difficult to not let Cuba bother you as you go there.
Well, no, it's difficult even if you don't go there. I think it's difficult to not let Cuba bother you. Just knowing, even in passing, how bad it can be, as far as, you know, human rights and things like that, and then just the state of things during COVID and what you've told us, Nick. You know, after you were there, after, you know, I don't want to say after COVID, probably during the latter stages of COVID, and then, you know, again this year, it's difficult to not be affected by that, because this hobby, this lifestyle, this industry that we're in is so relationship driven and so people driven, and to kind of know exactly what the people who's, like you said, started this whole thing. Like the Cuban people are known for their cigars. They're known for a lot of things, but their cigars is what we focus on. And to know that they could be suffering in a way that could, I don't know if easily is the right word, but that could be rectified. It hurts a little bit. And I think, yeah, you know,
rectified, that's the, you know, can it be rectified? There's no end in sight at this time. Politically speaking, I don't see any major changes happening anytime soon. The country does not have money. They can't find a system. You know, the embargo definitely has put a hurt more, even this terrorist act, being on the terrorism act or whatever they call that. That's affected them as much as the embargo, because they just got re-put on that. Obama had them taken off. And it makes things very difficult. It makes difficult for people to want to visit Cuba and then visit the United States, not just Americans. You know, Europeans now are having problems where they never did before with these visas, where it was always Americans that were affected. Now it's easier for Americans to go to Cuba than it is for Europeans to go to Cuba and then come to the U.S. It's bizarre, but it's definitely, I've seen it affect quite a number of manufacturers that are going to the trade show or not because of the Cuba factor. So yeah, there's a lot of things that are being affected because of that.
Well, even if you could, let's just say tomorrow, you could, everything's lifted, everything's opened up, and you could just jump on a plane, go over there without any issues. You know, I think people would still have issues or troubles going, because it seems like from the past couple of episodes and articles that I've been reading, it's hard to just go there and be like, hey, I'm going to go for a vacation to Cuba. It's almost like
you can't vacation in Cuba as an American.
Right.
As an American.
Right.
Tourism is not allowed as an American.
But what I'm saying is, if all that changed and you had the ability to do that, I still think that you're going to have the government and the people like, we don't know you. What are you doing here?
Oh,
like,
I don't think it's that. I don't think that would be the issue, Tim. I feel,
what do you
like
think it would be?
Well, because I feel like Nick has talked about this. They don't hate Americans. I don't, do they? They don't
not
work
at all.
At a,
no,
yeah,
not at all.
No. No. I think they're very welcoming people, very caring people. They're like everybody else. Right?
Right, sure.
Here's the thing. There's a difference when you talk about people and you talk about ideology. And on this show, we don't talk about ideology. We talk about people. And so when you see people face to face, it's a lot different than what you hear when somebody's talking ideological, right? When you're talking about different ideologies, it gets very heated. And I hate that ideology. And I hate that form of government. I hate this. And I hate that. But when you're talking about people, especially face-to-face, that's certainly not the case. I feel like the problem would be there's no infrastructure. If it dropped, if the embargo and everything dropped tomorrow, we could all go to Cuba instead of going to the PCA trade show, which we wouldn't do, but if we could.
Right.
The problem would be infrastructure.
Speak for yourself.
I'm not going to be able to make it to the trade show this year.
Yeah. I feel like it would be an infrastructure problem. It would be a problem of would they be able to handle the influx of tourists that they would have immediately from the United States.
Well, they couldn't handle it when it started, when the Obama changes went into effect and people come under extra categories were added that were under general license to be able to go, which was one was people to people or something they called it. And so it was just another way of going there and interacting with the people. Or cultural exchange or whatever. They had all these different new categories that gave you a legitimate reason to be in Cuba other than tourism. They couldn't handle the amount of people that we got, you know, over that came over. Infrastructure, look, that's a big thing. Even the hotels that they've built, when they've asked other companies to go in and build hotels during when the period was allowed, let's just say, you know, the Four Points Sheraton opened, renovated one of the hotels there, called it a Four Points. Since then, of course, that was rescinded. So they had to like lose hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever just to pull back. But the point is, a lot of other hotel chains had looked at it and said, they don't have the infrastructure. They don't have this. You know, it's not just a matter of dumping X amount of dollars. So there's a lot that needs to be done in the country to bring it up to par. If they ever did, I've always said that all these other countries that are the big tourist attractions in the Caribbean now, they would have a second, you know, second class seat to Cuba because it is some of the most beautiful scenic views. It's very iconic. There's so many things I could tell you about, so many great things about why Cuba would be the best country to go, not to mention that it's so close to the U.S. and such a quick flight. And if everything else were normal, that would be the hot spot for most people, because Americans don't like getting on airplanes for one, and they don't like traveling very far. And that would be amazing because you're like off the coast, yet you're still in a different country, and it's like being on another planet on so many levels. So
yeah, it's what, a 90 miles.
That's what they say, 90 yeah. miles from Key West.
So well,
yeah, you could do a boat ride then. You wouldn't even have to get on a plane.
They were trying to reestablish ferry service. They used to have ferry service from Key West and from Miami, where you could take a ferry right to Havana. It's not that far. It's very close.
I'd do that in a heartbeat.
That'd be cool. But yeah, infrastructure, I guess that would, because that was kind of a question I was going to ask is, you know, how many hotels, I mean, how many people went to the festival?
About 2,500 was what they report.
So 2,000 to 2,500, there's enough hotel rooms and such to support at least.
No, there's plenty of hotel rooms. They've built in the last couple of years, you know, three or four very swanky, high-line new hotels as well. The Kempinski chain, the Packard. There's been a lot of new hotels that have opened up that are very expensive, mind you, and very nice. So to me, it's kind of weird. You know, like you're staying in this five-star plus hotel and you walk out on the street and it just doesn't go for me. You know, usually I like to stay at Casa Particulares, who are otherwise known here as Airbnbs, or like the Hotel Nacional, which is a 1930 hotel that, even though it's kept in pristine condition, it still feels like it's 1930. There's not that many amenities, but it's a beautiful, iconic hotel that is great and one of my favorite spots to have a cigar on the whole wide world, on the terrace of the National. So there's plenty of things to do there. There is enough structure for hotels. The roads, not so much. They're kind of beat up, but you could get around. They could support 2,500. That's nothing. They are so below the tourist levels, you know, of the peak for years now that they need more tourism, but it's a catch-22. They need tourism, but yet they don't have the petrol, and now the gas has gone five times more expensive as of, you know, March 1st. And that is going to change the prices on everything. So the people that live there, they say that the average person spends 70% of their salary, a Cuban person that lives there, spends 70% of their salary on food alone. I would venture it's probably more than that. And the reason they're only spending 70 is because they're not finding what they want. It's very difficult to get what you need there. Again, money gets you what you need for the most part, but it's a difficult place to live.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask next is the food situation, because it sounds like they're given some food, but then the government runs out of food and then there's nothing to eat.
And well, for the people, yes. You know, as a tourist, there's a lot of, they call them paladars or private restaurants, and they're bringing their stuff in by hand. Because again, there's no transports that come from the U.S. Mm. So literally people are flying back and forth between Miami, Panama, and other local cities, bringing in everything they need to bring. Two great spots that I always go every time I go, and I was able to go at least to one of them this time, is I'm not a big sushi food eater, you know, but there's there's a place called Shanti's. It's on the outskirts of Havana, and I've been going there for 15 years, and it's just fantastic. It's literally caught and served. It's that, you know, right there you see the water, the people are bringing it up, all kinds of fish. Fantastic food there. My other favorite place is what we refer to as the chicken place. It's called El Aljibe, and that's a government-owned kind of chicken, all-you-can-eat chicken. And that chicken is just, the way they prepare it is just unbelievable. So, you know, some great spots. And if you have money and you can live there, you know, you're just going to spend more than you would normally spend. It's almost like spending U.S.-level dollars. But for us, we're used to it, right? The Cubans, it's totally different game.
So I didn't hear, I heard it, but I didn't hear it. And I was just going to ask, instead of going back and listening to it, while you're at the Festival de Habano, you don't eat at the event. I'm assuming you go out on to the restaurants or the economy, or do you want to eat at the event?
Most people don't eat there. If you ask most of the participants, sometimes the food's pretty good, other times not so good. I hate to slam on it because, you know, they do spend so much time and effort to prepare these meals. But think about, you know, getting meals prepared for 2,000 people. It's quite unedible. This last time it was some kind of fish. I didn't eat it. I did eat the other two or three courses of what they gave you, but that was just cold. I mean, you know, the soup is usually, you know, what's that cold soup that they usually give you? But anyway, it's not bad. The food, it's edible. It's just most people don't eat it. You know, that's what I'm saying.
And that's kind of, so I know, you know, Brooks was, when Brooks was talking about it, he was like, nobody, you know, we don't eat there. I mean, it wasn't a slam, I don't think, to the people. It was, I think that goes to kind of what we've just been talking about, is they're not used to catering for people on a regular way. Like Brooks had brought up that the simple things in life that we take for granted.
Right.
Like they don't have in Cuba. They can't even fathom it. And I think this is just one of those instances where you are better served if you're there for Festival de Habano and you're an American, or you're a European and you're traveling there for it, you're better served to go somewhere that they do this every day. You know, this is a once a year thing. It's not something they do every day. We just take that for granted that we can go hire a catering company that does this every day. I don't know. How many catering companies are there in Havana?
Well, again, everything is government run, owned. And they do a lot of these trade shows. You know, this is probably one of the biggest ones. So they're serving, you know, 2,000 dishes. And it is quite a feat. You know, you got, think about how many waiters that are handing out, you know, putting the dish in front of you, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people. But even so, things are going to get cold. And then the quality of the food, that's another story. I'm only going to say that other years have been better, some years better than others. But again, the general consensus for anybody that goes to a festival has been or going is, make sure you go full, like you've had a meal. You may pick, you may eat something more, but if you you haven't eaten that day, you're going to be hungry.
Well, you know? Okay. So look, we're getting ready to go to PCA, and what do they have every year at the PCA? There's a damn food court, right?
Right. That which I'm should sure, be a little different this time.
Well, obviously it's going to be a little different this time because it's at a different location, but every right. location has that. You know, and we talked about my old Kentucky Herf earlier. They have food trucks come in. right? They hire somebody to come in and provide food, and then there's food trucks there you can buy extra food from. Look, you can't do that in Cuba because, like Nick said, it's all government run. You're not calling a food truck. You're calling the government saying, hey, I need more food, and the government's going to provide it. Now, you think that because Cuba is a smaller country that the government would be more efficient. As I have learned, I don't think any government. A government is, by definition.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
But where this is not a show about ideology. So it's one of those things that, yeah, like Nick said, you eat before you eat after because you're not going to eat there.
What about the cost of the festival?
I wanted to talk about that. And that's why, yeah. That was one of the specific questions that I had asked was, you know, how much does this thing cost? And when I'm looking at events and, you know, Wild Kentucky Herf, $200 gets you 20, probably over 20 cigars, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many cigars did you say you got, Nick, at Festival del Habano?
If you went to all the events, including the ones they hand out to dinners, you might come back with 30 to 40.
So for let's just call it 5,000. Spot me the
4,000. Let's call it 4,000.
All right, cool. I'll spot you the 1,000. $4,000.
We're gonna rub noses over $1,000.
Yeah, no, I'll spot you the 1,000. It's $4,000 to go. You get 30 cigars, but here's the thing: it's a different mindset for Festival del Habano than it is any other cigar event that you would do probably around the world. When you go to Festival del Habano, you know what you're going for, right? You're going for it's an experience. It is, and these cigars now with the price increase across the board, like you are getting a lot of money in cigars, but you're not getting the quantity. I'm not going to talk about quality, but you're not getting the quantity of cigars that you get. Like, so for example, I was looking today, Rocky Mountain Cigar Fest later this year is $595 for executive VIP. Now, if you added it all up from last year, it was over 100 cigars you got for the executive VIP. I got two cutters valued at, you know, let's just say $80, but they're probably $100 a pop, $125 a pop, plus a very nice ashtray that's probably $50-$60. Plus you get the experience, right? And while you're there, you can purchase cigars, just like you can in Wild Kentucky Herb. You can purchase more cigars. You can purchase from your favorite people. You can purchase from Nick. You can purchase from Lou. You can purchase from whoever. You can't do that. There, you go to the LCDH, and like Nick said, as an American, it's harder to do that because you can't purchase by credit card normally. And even their stock is limited, right, Nick?
Absolutely. They brought in so much stuff just for the trade show. I was there the day before, and literally the shelves were bare. There was nothing on any shelf of any Casa del Habanos, and they were rapidly the day before Sunday, you know, piling some stuff on the shelves. And I'm telling you, as soon as they're putting them up, they're being sold and they're coming down. The prices keep going up. The gala prices, last year, I just looked it up. It was $12.50 for the gala dinner. This year was $17.50. When I started going, the gala was like $500-$600 alone. And then it went up to $700, and it was like, oh my God, then $800. And then it just went into the stratosphere. It just went into what I'd call the stupid range, you know? But guess what? They get the same amount of people that go. So is it wrong? This is a big moneymaker for Habanos. This is, you know, this event brings in a lot of money. And on top of that, now they're maximizing by selling cigars here where, you know, it was never like, you know, Cuba is actually a big market for them. So they only give an X amount of percentage to Cuba because they want people to come to Cuba to, you know, for tourism. So to get the tourists there, they're putting cigars. So a lot of the Asians are coming to Cuba because they can't get it in their country at home. So that's why. And they used to limit it. And they, I don't know now if they limit it. It used to be when I first started going there, you were allowed to bring X amount of boxes. Then it became a dollar price. Like $5,000, then it went to 25. I mean, you know, they gave you a very generous amount, and people were literally loading up their suitcases with legitimate cigars, with invoices, because that's the only way you're going to get out, you know, of the country with cigars is with invoices. And people were buying them, and whether they were reselling them or stocking them for their own, you know, I don't think Habanos cared as much. But they got some flack from their distributors and retailers, and that's why they had to curb it back a little bit. But now most of the stuff is going over to Asia, and what the distributors want, they get a percentage, a fraction, because they can sell it. If they can't sell it to their local market, they can sell it to the Asian market, you know. So, again, if they have on order 100 boxes, they may get four. So
wow.
There's not a lot out there, and what's out there is selling for well above, you know. So, again, we talked about it a lot over the last couple of years with the price differentials and, you know, is it a good idea, bad idea? I think in the short term for Habanos, it's going to mean more money. They did have a 30% increase in revenue because of the price increase, because at least the year before was only like 2% difference. But the difference between last year and this year is a minimum of 30% price increase. So there you go. There's where they made the difference. So they made more profit this year. And next year, guess what? They're going to be even higher. And again, as long as supply and demand is there, as long as the Asia market is just insatiable for cigars, they're going to be fine. If that market ever dries up, they're going to be in trouble. Then they're going to have to start scrambling. And then, unfortunately, they're going to have done so much damage, in my opinion, you know, worldwide, where they've given up a lot of market share in other parts of the world because, you know, they have their customers in the Asian market that are willing to pay X amount of dollars, and as many as they want, they can get. And so they don't care so much. But the average person that only smoked Cuban cigars before now is like, you know what, let me try some of the New World cigars. So that's good news for manufacturers of non-Cuban cigars. For the last few years, they've seen an influx and an increase in their sales worldwide. And I don't think that it's going to go anywhere but up.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to touch on, excuse me, I want to touch on something real quick that Nick said, and Brooks said it in the interview with him, was that this is a trade show. This is the Habanos Essays trade show. And Brooks said when he walked in for the first time, you know, in what, 2016, 2015, he walked in, he was expecting it to be a lot like the PCA. And it's just not. And even more so now, and I kind of want to highlight the differences for folks who are like, well, if it's a trade show, why isn't it? Like there are differences, obviously. The first one is it's all run by the government. So all of these brands that are there, cigar brands are, and I asked the question if some of the vendors there were not run by the government. Obviously they weren't.
No, there are. There's plenty of vendors that are non, you know, government.
But all of the cigar vendors are all government.
That's correct.
Right. Yes. So that, I think that's the first one. So you have it, you're not dealing with a bunch of private companies from Cuba. These are all run by the government. The second is, this isn't a trade show like the PCA in the sense that what the PCA does is, well, they do a lot of things, right? The PCA is run by retailers and for retailers. That's not the case with that trade show in Cuba. Plus, you said it yourself, Nick, on this show several times that they've wanted to turn Cohiba and Trinidad into the Birkenbag of cigars.
And they've done
high end, and they've done it. Like you kind of alluded to it now, where you were talking about, you know, they're really pricing out the regular cigar guy out of Festival del Habano and out of Habanos SA cigars in general. They're pricing out your everyday cigar smoker, and that
I don't know who normally would spend almost $2,000. For a dinner, a single dinner that you can't possibly be doing it for the gifts. Okay, they give you a nice DuPont lighter, $300-$500. What is it worth? I'm not sure. The little coffin of a couple cigars, is that a collector's item? Could you resell that somewhere for a lot of money? Possibly. And then the five, six other cigars that you're getting while you're sitting there between courses, if you're going for that and trying to justify financially, like we're saying with the Kentucky Herb for $200, you're getting 20 plus cigars and that's a bargain. There's no way you can justify it financially. This is something, it's an event to be at, to say you were there, for people that go, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what the purpose is.
The other big difference is that the proceeds at Festival del Habano go to, are supposed to go to the Cuban healthcare system, whether it does
No. The proceeds for the full festival go to Habanos. The only thing that is earmarked is the auction. Yes.
But that's what brings in the majority of the money is the auction.
Well,
right?
Yeah, the $20 million. Yes.
Yeah. So that goes, that's a big difference too, where all of the money that is made at the trade show, the PCA International Convention and Trade Show, that goes to support the PCA and their endeavors to fight the unfair regulations and the FDA and all of that. So they're two different things. One is very pro-government. The other one is maybe let's temper what government's trying to do a little bit. And that's what the PCA does. So there are some very marked differences and private is that we could talk about the ideology behind it, but we're not going to. But essentially, when you have more private business opportunities like you do outside of Cuba, you're going to have a lot more companies fighting for that market share instead of the government just basically owning that market share. So those are something that I just wanted to make sure that we touched on that a little bit.
It almost sounds like Festival del Habano is something that would be featured in the Good Life section of a certain magazine.
Yeah, Cigar Aficionado, I'm 100% sure they're there every year and they're covering it and they're doing their thing. And that's fine. Look, have at it. Like I'm very glad Nick goes and I'm very glad we got to cover it.
Yeah.
And I'm very glad we got to have Brooks on and that he gets to go. You know, and if you missed it, guys, go watch Nick's interview with Coop. He was under the weather. He's still a little under the weather, but he was a trooper and he talked with Coop for almost 2 hours about this. And covered it in depth. And I thought it was a really good interview. Nick, you did a great job. But yeah, I mean, they're definitely there and they're doing it. And honestly, that's, if I'm being honest, I like the fact that Nick gets to go and I like the fact that Half Wheel goes and, you know, but this is Cigar Aficionado territory. This is, Rolls Royce came out with a humidor for their new Karma. Who gives a fuck? Like how many cigar smokers are fucking buying a Rolls Royce and then fucking popping for that $30,000 fucking humidor that fits inside of it?
Well, if I bought a Rolls Royce, you damn bet you I'd have a humidor.
Yeah, I was going
to say you're the exception to the rule. I don't have fucking $250,000 to drop on a fucking Rolls Royce and then another $30,000 to fucking drop on that humidor.
My point is, if you're going to drop $250,000, you can afford the $30,000 to do the
humidor. Well, 100%. But I don't think, and I might be wrong. Like, look, guys, if you're in the audience and you're rolling around in a fucking Rolls Royce, like, let me know. I'll eat crow. And then I'll hit you up.
We have an LE membership for that.
We have an LE lifetime membership I'll hit you up for. I feel like Festival del Habano is in that category, like you were saying, Tim, of it's unobtainium for most cigar smokers in the United States. Not all, for sure, but for most. And even around the world, you know, when they had, what, 5-6 humidors that they auctioned off and it was over 20 million that they made U.S.?
Just under 20.
Yeah, just under. Like, that's a lot of money. And that is, again, unobtainium. Nobody that I know of who smokes cigars is able to afford a quarter of those humidors.
No, I know I
certainly
couldn't. Now, are you talking, when you say $4,000 to go to the event, are you talking all in hotel airfare, the cash that you bring with you in your pocket, or are you saying $5,000 plus
$5,000? No, I love that fucking laugh.
I'm saying it was $3,750, which included the events that Habanos did for the week, the opening night dinner, the Wednesday night dinner, the gala dinner, the visit to the plantations, the international seminar, the visit to the cigar factories, and any other events that they had, the entrance to the trade show. That's it. That's your $3,750.
Wow. Not travel.
And,
it's not,
and yeah. 5 years ago, it was under 2,000.
It's so, it's kind of like, yeah. And those of you who've been loyal audience members of the show for a few years, you'll get this reference. And for those of you who won't, I'll probably explain it here in a minute. But Tim, let me explain it to you like this.
All right.
It's like market price. Okay. It's like market price. Seeing that we're coming up on the trade show, I figure it was time to bust that out again. It's like market price. But I'll tell the story because I don't even know if Nick knows the story. So the second year we were at the trade show, we were all in a big group, and we decided to go to this restaurant there inside the Venetian. And we sit down at the restaurant, and I think Randy had bought like every dinner that we had been there. He was going to buy
all
this
but one.
Told it. Yeah, he's like, I'm going to buy this one. Don't worry about it, guys. Get whatever. And so like we're all going around ordering, and Tim goes, what's MP? And I'm like, it's market price. Randy goes, yeah, it's market price. Everyone's like, yeah, it's market price. He goes, what's market price? So he's getting on his phone. He's trying to look. And he couldn't find what it was. And he's like, well, fuck it. And Randy's like, well, what? Just get it. Whatever. He's like, all right. So he gets this lobster mac and cheese. He's like, I've never had lobster. And we're like, you've never gone to a fucking Red Lobster and gotten a lobster. Like, they have Lobster Fest all the fucking time, you pov. And you've never had a lot. He's like, no. So the bill comes out. He eats his slice. Like, this is the greatest thing ever. Like, that had a lobster head on it. He's like, just fucking, man, I'm laughing. Randy's laughing. Fucking, the bill comes and Tim's like, I just want to know, like, how do I have to give you a blowjob? Is it like, how much? No,
I think you added that part in.
And Randy's like, here, he hands him the receipt. And Tim's like, oh shit, I do owe you a blowjob.
I was thinking, okay, it's Vegas, so I know things are a little bit more expensive, but I was thinking, it's probably $50. And No. Best lobster I ever had.
Yeah, well, so Festival del Habano is kind of like market price. Every year, it's going to probably just go up.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're trying to go after. Yeah, I don't begrudge them that. I mean, do you, Nick?
No, that's how they're making money right now. And you know, listen, it goes to show you, there's a big thing, whatever the market will bear, which is similar to saying market price. If you're willing to pay it, if somebody's willing to pay it, then that's what they can charge. If it gets to the point where they charge 10,000 for the gala and only they only sell 5 tickets, then they overshot, then they got to go peel it back. But as long as they're selling out or getting what they want, they're going to keep raising the price for sure.
Well, I did ask Brooks this, and I really wish that I had, because I would love to know his take on this. But I know we've talked about it a couple times, but I think this is a good spot to kind of bring it up, Nick, is that the non-Cuban market is kind of testing the waters with that as well a little bit with these $30, $40, $50, $60, $100, $300, $500 cigars. They're testing the market to kind of see what the market can bear. And we've talked about who said that the day of the $10 cigar is over. And I think that
that's a direct correlation of their saying, holy crap, Habanos is charging how much and getting it. You know, when we always are quick, meaning the American market, is quick to slam the Cuban cigars, Cuban market, yet they follow it so closely. Terms, new ideas, new technologies coming out of this, you know, for lack of a better word, third world country that's still on the forefront when it comes to cigars and producing good cigars. Yeah, you can slam it all you want, but they still make damn good cigars when they're done right. And yes, they do have good things that they're introducing to the market, different seed varietals that have never been around before that have come from there. You know, I mentioned it during the Brooks thing, the Medio Tiempo leaf. Nobody had even heard of what that leaf was until Cuba invented it. Now you got so many manufacturers, you know, non-Cuban cigar manufacturers using that like it's, oh, of course, you know, this is a Medio Tiempo leaf. Like it's been around for 100 years and everybody knew about it. But no, it wasn't. They just kind of take it and use it. So it's like, oh, we use it when we want to, but then we can slam on them for everything else. That's what annoys me about slamming the Cuban market.
It annoys the shit out of me too, Nick. And I've talked about this with you. Like when you watch the hand-rolled movie, and I'm just kind of picking on them because it's a easy example. You know, and all of these cigar manufacturers are like, oh yeah, Cuban quality is this, Cuban quality is that, Cuban quality is not what it used to be, this, that, and the other. And then 10 seconds later, it's our cigars are Cuban-esque. Our cigars are Cuban-esque. Our cigars are the most Cuban-esque of all the Cuban-esque cigars. It's like, shut the fuck up. You're talking out of both sides of your mouth. Are Cuban cigars good and yours are Cuban-esque, or are they terrible and your cigars are terrible? Like, what are you trying to say? You know? So I that annoys the shit out of me. And look, I've talked shit about Cuban cigars on this show and their quality control. And I still think that's an issue, but like Nick said, when you said it a million times, when a Cuban cigar is good, it's great. Like, and there's nothing like it on the planet. And there are great non-Cuban cigars as well. I'm not taking anything away from non-Cuban cigars, but a good Cuban cigar is always great.
And again, it's what your palate is used to, what you like, what your dislikes and likes. You know, if you're used to eating a particular meal every day of your life and you know what that's supposed to taste like, and then somebody gives you something from another country that you've never had, it's going to be different. Whether you like it, not better, worse, just different. So for people that normally have only smoked Cuban cigars their whole life because they weren't living in the U.S., and then you give them a non-Cuban cigar, initially, it's going to be so vastly different to what they're accustomed to. Does that mean it's wrong or bad? No, it's just different. The way wines are different from Spain, from France versus California and Australia, they're all different. They're all good, but they're different. So you just have to figure your palate, see what you like. I think I'm all about trying everything, Cuban, non-Cuban. Why say, no, I don't smoke it? If you want to say for political reasons, you know, that's a different story. But if you want to try a cigar just to say, hey, I've never had a Cuban cigar, you may not like it, especially if you've never had one before. And then make sure you have a real one on top of it. But the point of it is there's different cigars from different countries. And there's so many. That's what's so great about this is the renaissance. For me, this is the renaissance period of cigars, because you can blend so many cool, amazing things using all the tools that are out there, that literally it's like a white canvas and just go to it. I've been enjoying the hell out of it. And, you know, and I think people that try different cigars and don't get stuck on, oh, I only smoke this one. You know, those people are missing out, in my opinion. But you know what? Look, at least they're smoking cigars. All right. I'm done ranting.
Are you sure? Are you sure? Mm-hmm.
You keep going, Nick. I like it. You're on a roll, man.
Yeah.
No,
you done. Mentioned
I'm done.
One of the things that, and I don't remember if it was you or Brooks, maybe both of you said this, but you said that Cuba, if you're not familiar with it or you've never been there before, like Cuba will chew you up and spit you out. And I was just wondering if you could expand a little bit on that, because on this show, I'm the dumbest guy in the room.
Well, it's a place that even if you spoke Spanish, yeah, you basically have. I always said that nothing is kind of normal in Cuba. Like they just do things. Some things just don't make sense. And if you went there and had no idea what you were looking for, there'll be people that will take advantage of you. But that's in any country. You know, they see dollars, tourist dollars, they're going to take advantage of you. But just normal things, I don't know where to begin as an example, but, you know, they're just not, they don't have the experience. The people don't have the experience with dealing, you know, business. When I was doing tours there, and I still have people, you know, that are literally, Nick, when can you take us? When we have a group, I have a group. And I look at it and I go, you know what? I just don't want to do it. I would take friends over, but the point of it is, even on a good day when they had resources and they had everything else, they don't understand business. They don't know that, hey, you know what? I have a group of 12 people. Maybe you should make room for me instead of saying I don't have room. But that's not how it works. Like silly things. I just thought of one silly example. If you're going to a convenience store to buy a soda, a pack of gum, and it's at 4 o'clock or whatever the time is of shift change, they will sit there. They don't care how many customers are in the store lining up around the block. They will sit there for a half hour, count out their till, and it takes them forever. And you're like, are you kidding me? I just want to buy this pack of gum.
I know 7-Elevens that do that.
they just look at you like, you'll wait your turn, sir. You know what I mean? And it's like, and when most shops are owned by the government, as I mentioned, I remember the first couple of years, it was a little frustrating. I was looking for a particular Cohiba baseball cap because they hadn't made it in a couple of years. I heard some stores had it, and I'd go around and I'd say, hey, do you have this hat? And they'd go, no. And I go, wait a minute, isn't that it right there? Like on that shelf? Oh yeah, there it is. It's like, can I buy it? Okay. We don't know what it costs though. Well, can you make up one? Like
make up a price. I don't know.
You know, it's like, those are some examples that I would give.
Let me ask you, Nick, because when you're talking about that, the first thing that came to my mind is like a country bumpkin going into the big city for the first time or vice versa. I don't think it's done out of maliciousness. Is it like sometimes it is in the big city, you go to, you know, you always hear about, you know, the city slickers, they took me for a ride or whatever. I don't think it's malicious, and I don't even think that it's incompetence. I think it's just ignorance, for lack of a better term. Like they really don't, because it's all government owned, and it's, they don't understand. They don't do things the way we do here because of capitalism, right?
Well, for a country that does not support capitalism, there's a hell of a lot more capitalism going on in the last 10 years than I've seen much other countries. A lot of new restaurants, a lot of private houses. So there is a lot of private enterprise. They realize the government took a lot of people off the annual, you know, whatever they're paying them. They just took them off because they didn't have enough money. They used to give a certain staple, you know, sugar and things like that, eggs, for free. No, now they charge you. You have a card, you pay a very small fee, but they're charging for that now, that, you know, whatever you get every week or whatever they call that. But there's a little bit of both. Like if you don't know what they're going to charge, you tell me, take me out over here, and you don't get the price ahead of time or try to figure it out, they will charge you 5 to 10 times more than the normal rate, you know, whatever they can get out of you, basically. So yeah, there's a little bit of that country bumpkin thing. But at the same time, because most places just are not used to dealing with tourists. Now, the restaurants, here's the problem. What's happening there now is that all the people that have left Cuba, remember now, there's been over 1 million people that have departed and all landed on our shores here in the U.S. 1 million people in just the last year plus, which is way more than they've had since the Mariel Boliff and the Pedro Pan, and just the influx in the last year plus has been just insane. So where did they get these people? First were the people that spoke English. They were the first ones to get out of there, right? Where are they coming from? The hotels and the restaurants. The second level are the ones that understood a little bit about business and doing with tourists. They went off. So now the restaurants, the hotels, where are they going to get their next flock of people? They got to go search through the provinces and get those people to come into Cuba to start training them again. So it's gone steps and steps behind right now. A lot of the private places are very, very cool and remind me of being in Miami. But yet most of the other places, service is just unheard of. I'll give you one example. I don't know if I talked about this on the episode with Brooks. I had lunch with the director of one of the major hotels there. And this is the director of the whole corporate company based out of whether it was Switzerland or Germany. And we had the worst service I've ever had in my life. And I'm looking at, and this guy is the equivalent of the CEO of like that Marriott Corporation. You'd think people would be kissing his ass and bending over backwards and making sure everything was perfect. He's got to get up himself like six times to try to get this. And it's embarrassing. And I just looked at him. I go, man, I don't know how you do it. He goes, why do you think they sent me here? He's like, but you know what? You can't, you'll lose your brain. You'll lose your mind. You know, so you just kind of go with the flow. Like he was, for like me, I would have been embarrassed to bring friends, guests, or anybody at this five-star hotel and you can't get service. And then make excuses for it. At least he didn't make excuses for it. He said, it's Cuba, man. We're lucky we have what we have. You know, the level, the quality of labor is just, they got to retrain from scratch. You know, a million people plus have left that country. And Havana is the jump off point. There's 1.5 million people that live in Havana. So you can basically, everybody that lived in Havana for the last few years is gone. And it's all been reflushed with Cubans from other parts of the island, and now they're the next ones getting ready to jump off, and that's how it'll be as long as we keep receiving them.
Sounds like you have to be a really patient person when traveling to other countries, especially countries such as Cuba.
Well, every country's got their, you know, idiosyncrasies and differences. You're never going to get the same kind of service you do as you do in the U.S. And part of the reason is because we tip here. A lot of other countries, the tip is included in the service. So you tip, but, you know, very little, like usually 10% or other, depending on the country. And the service is not quite as good, you know. But here in the U.S., you can expect exceptional service. But, you know, again, sometimes what's annoying to me here in the U.S. is when you have to, not have to, but you pretty much have to tip, you know, 20, 25%, whatever the case may be, and you're still getting shitty service.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one thing to say, okay, I'm paying for the service, but when you don't and you're still expected to pay that, that gets me a little bit annoyed, but it is what it is. But other parts of the country, I mean, other parts of the world, doesn't happen that way, no.
I've stopped rewarding bad behavior at restaurants.
Well,
and it's shitty service, you get a shitty tip.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even want to get into tipping culture, but when you go to a drive-thru just to pick up a cup of coffee and they hand the little thing out the window, like, oh, it's going to ask you a question.
Oh, let me bring that back to let me bring that back to cigars for a second. If I walk into a lounge and I go into the humidor and I get my cigar and I choose it and I don't get any help or nobody comes in and says, you know, hey, can I help you? Or they want to start a conversation about cigars I'm looking at, or they don't have any kind of knowledge base about the cigars, and then they don't ask if they can cut the cigar, they don't come, and then they ask for a tip, and then you sit down and they don't come around to see if you need a drink, they don't come around to see if you need a glass of ice, there's no service there whatsoever, and they're asking for a tip at point of sale. Fuck right off.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's part of the POS system.
Well,
that's the excuse. That's,
you can turn that off. You can absolutely turn that off. I find that insulting. And unless I know the person or I got outstanding customer service, if I walk into your lounge and you're asking for a tip, I'm not giving you a tip.
What about buying a bottle of water that's already $6 at an airport and then they have 20% tip? You're like, are you kidding me?
And it's self-service.
I just picked this up and I'm supposed to pay this ridiculous amount of money. Fine, I accept that. But I have to pay a tip? You know, it's like...
And then they're like, they try to shame you into it, right? Because they're like, oh, we've got to push... You know, you go do 10, 15, 20, or 25, or if you don't want to tip at all, you can do other. I'm like, oh, yeah, other. And I look them right in the eye as I hit the other button. Oh.
Well, I can't do that either, though.
Now, see, I'm an asshole. I don't care. I'm fine with it. But it just annoys me because they did nothing and they expect, like, it's almost expected now because it's a service industry. And that's just, it's not the way things have worked in the past. And I know I sound like an old curmudgeon
walking out in my yard,
my hands shaking at the sky.
Get off my
clouds.
Lawn.
Yeah, but I'm not tipping for that kind of stuff. Now, if it's outstanding customer service, then absolutely I will. But no, I'm not. Stop doing that. If you're at a lounge and your lounge is doing that, you stop. Just Stop. It's terrible. I hate that.
on that little note of pure grumpiness, what do we got coming up? Because after this, we start packing.
Yeah, I'm packing all of this stuff up tonight. We head out to Vegas for the PCA trade show. That's what's coming up for the next couple of weeks, guys. You know, after this episode, look, you can go to simplystogies.com, or you can go to our YouTube, our Instagram, our Facebook, our Rumble. We'll have a live every morning from the trade show starting on day one. We'll have starting on day zero at night, every night. We'll have a recap. So we'll recap the opening party for you and just kind of whatever stories we've got from the road and our travels. I'm really looking forward to it. It's not very often that I get to hang out in person with Nick. And so I'm very much looking forward to it. So look for that, guys.
Tim.
You know, no. I get to hang out with him. I don't give a shit about whatever.
Yeah.
And Tim, whatever.
Must be talking about a different Tim.
A different Tim. Yeah, so look forward to that, guys. You know, a week from now, we'll have our first episode of all of the PCA interviews that we've gotten done. Look forward to that. And then week after that, the Clear of the Air, we'll record the Clear of the Air there while we're at the trade show. That should be a lot of fun. And we'll talk about kind of what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't like, what we think is coming down the pipe that you guys should be looking for and that kind of stuff. But before we get out of here, I want to wish a very happy and belated birthday to my friend and the guy who brings more knowledge to this show than I could ever bring. Nick Sirus, I hope you had a happy birthday, my friend. I can't wait to celebrate it a little bit with you out there in Vegas. I know you were a little under the weather. Hopefully you'll feel 100% better while we're there.
I hope so.
I know, because you're just like...
It's almost been 2 weeks. I still got the cough. It's sucks.
Did you have a happy birthday though? Was it a good birthday?
It was a birthday.
What day was your birthday?
The 14th.
Oh, okay.
I was, you know, recovering, but still very much coughing and sick. So, you know,
well,
haven't smoked a cigar. So,
yeah,
no taste, you know, and it just defeats the purpose of trying to do something.
So. Don't be bringing that shit to Vegas.
Well, I may have to stay home then. I don't know.
Bring it. Give it to Tim. I don't care if Tim gets it.
That's still how many more days?
Five days. Yeah, you got 5 days. You'll be all right.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it. So we'll celebrate the birthday with Nick. It should be a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoy the coverage. And look, if this isn't your jam, I get it. Although the gentleman Tom, who emailed me saying, "Hey, why do you guys do this?" I kind of turned it off. He's still listening. He sent me an email. He's like, "Hey,
wait, he turned
still
off.
Listening.
Why did he turn it off?
He's just not interested in the PCA stuff."
Oh, I see.
You know, and I get it. There are some B&Ms out there that don't go, and that's up to them. It's certainly not, you know, mandatory. And some B&Ms find value in it. Some of them don't. But yeah, he's still listening. So Tom, I appreciate your loyal viewership, listenership. And look, guys, I hope we can bring some fun content for you guys, and you guys get to kind of know what's going on and see what the manufacturers have for you. And on that note, I will get us out of here. Until next time, stay smoky, friends.